Oof, starting with a hard one. I think parody is, firstly, is likely to be in a specific case, whereas satire is a whole work. But also, satire normally has some type of social purpose. So you can parody something without any social purpose. But ask me that on the forum, which nobody uses, and I will give you a proper answer. That's my first inkling. Classmates, any other answers to that? Am I wrong? If it might be wrong, we will see. Okay, but if I remember, I will ask you, I will post something on the forum, and if not, do remind me. So, what names can be applied to this period? What can we call this period of literature? The Enlightenment. Okay, but that would be more this period of culture rather than literature. But yes, okay, we can call it the Enlightenment. Why? Right, okay, so the Age of Reason is one of our options, probably more used in, specifically in literature than the Enlightenment. Why the Age of Reason? What does that imply? Manuel's here. Hello, Manuel. Can you hear me? Sorry to interrupt. Can you hear me, Manuel? Hello, good. Okay, you can hear me okay. Not very fast writer. Well, let's head to. Good, okay, excellent. So, we're saying that this can be called the Age of Reason. Why? So there's a focus on rationality, good. There's been a sort of focus on human beings for quite some time since the humanism. But there's a focus on rationality, moderation is very highly valued, and politeness. Okay, so sort of being a decent person who doesn't get overexcited, if you like, it can be seen as a reaction to enthusiasm. Enthusiasm was originally, enthusiasm is now a good thing, without any question. I think it's always used positively. Enthusiasm in the 17th and 18th century tended to refer to getting overexcited about religion. So doing all sorts of Protestant things like speaking in tongues and shouting out and raising your hands and fainting, those sorts of religious behaviors which are not rational and modest and moderate and polite. So we can understand that intellectual society wants to reject those types of things at the same time as it wants to reject the licentiousness of a lot of the aristocratic culture that we had in the second half of the 17th century after the restoration of the monarchy. Any other names for this period? Right, the Augustan Age, why? A question before that. When is the Augustan Age? What dates are we going to apply to the Augustan Age? Okay, 1745 is the consolidation of the Hanoverians because of the defeat of the second Jacobite rebellion, the last attempt to put a Stuart back on the throne, but it is also, I'm pretty sure, the death of Jonathan Swift, which is also a important thing. Why do we say the Augustan Age? Who does Augustine refer to? The Emperor Augustus, right. And so? So it's about conquering lots of countries? No. It's about the fact that the most fruitful period of Roman literature was the Augustan Age with Virgil and Horace and Ovid. So Virgilio, Horatio and Ovidio. In their English pronunciations and spellings. So the idea is that there is a conscious attempt to imitate those Augustan writers. What does that mean? What can we say about those Augustan writers? Virgil, Horace, and Ovid. No? Well, they saw things in terms of decorum, balance, to some extent, wit, good taste, and refinement. Remember, all of this will be in the notes, so I'd rather you think actively and tell me you've just contradicted yourself, or I don't understand, or something, rather than taking notes, because I'll give you the notes. You can do what you like, but it shouldn't be necessary. Why is that ironic? Why is it ironic that these people are imitating the values of the Augustan age? Were these the values of Roman slaves? Were they the values of Roman citizens? Whose values were these? These ideas of decorum and good taste and refinement. And who in Rome would have particularly aspired to these values? Yeah? They are patrician values. Okay, they are values of the upper class, the ruling class in Rome. Who are the Augustan writers writing for? Are they writing for the aristocracy still? No, good, no. They are writing for the bourgeoisie. Yeah, what we have is an emergence of the bourgeoisie, and this is basically the basis for bourgeois culture. So the Roman virtues of perseverance, fortitude, self-control, etc., are being taken from a patrician context and being used in a bourgeois context. And basically, from now on, where, if you think of sort of Shakespeare and the Elizabethans and the Stuart literature, the focus tends to be on aristocratic characters. The aristocracy basically fades into the background. I mean, you may have an occasional aristocratic character. Lady Wishfort is obviously aristocratic, but most of the people from now on are going to be bourgeois characters. They're people who are members of the gentry, but not members of the aristocracy. So, we can call this the Augustan Age or the Age of Reason. Any other names for it? Another way of saying the Augustan Age with a similar reference? the neoclassical age or neoclassicism.
Any names in terms of time reference?
I'm not liking my questions today. This is called the long 18th century. Yeah? The long 18th century. When does the long 18th century begin and when does it end? It's a trick question. No? The long 18th century begins in 1660 and ends in 1790. Why does it begin in 1660? Because of the restoration of the monarchy, and therefore there's a shift in terms of the power structures in the country and who writers are writing for and the value systems, etc., etc. Why 1790? What happens in 1790? Do they invent ice cream? What happens in 1790? Why is 1790 a special time? Good. Okay, so it's basically the age of revolution. We have the end of the American Revolution, which has a certain impact in Britain, and beginnings of the French Revolution. And so what are the consequences of that? My telephone is sounding. Why is my telephone? I don't know how to silence my telephone. I should learn how to do this. It will go quiet eventually. What happens with literature? With the French Revolution? What happens to English literature? What is the consequence of the French Revolution? You haven't got there yet. The direct consequence of the French Revolution is Romanticism. Yeah? So you have people like Wordsworth and Coleridge and Blake who are very much associated politically with the French Revolution and a complete sea change in terms of values. Okay.
Another way of referring to this period, I'm not going to make you suffer anymore, is the age of satire.
So, what is the difference between satire and just comedy? It's almost his question.
Satire, you want to aim at something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. What are you almost always criticizing in satire?
Society.
Right. What specific aspect of society?
Manners.
Could be manners, but more in a more sort of abstract sense. Yeah. This is your chance, Jorge, Juan Jorge, colonial, not necessarily, hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is the main objective of satire, along with pride and greed, but normally hypocrisy is in there somewhere. So there is a focus on the gulf between how things are and how things should be. Okay, if you as a society hold these values, then why is this happening? Basically, is what satire is asking. Where have we come across satire before in this degree? Ben Jonson in Volpone. 1 point. 1 point. And point. And before that? Ooh, a long time ago. Even before Ben Jonson. Was there satire in Beowulf? No. Was there satire in Sir Gawain and the Green Knight? Sorry?
No, Chaucer.
Chaucer, good. Okay, so the Canterbury Tales is stuffed full of satire. It's all about hypocrisy. It's all about people who are pretending to be one thing and actually demonstrating that they are another. So there's a lot of criticizing society there. What type of satire is Chaucer? Sorry? Indirect, okay, yes. So it is, there is a narrative, or it is dramatic, so it is indirect. How else can we qualify satire? Yeah. Right, so we have Horatian or Juvenalian. You have a 50% chance, which is Chaucer. It's Horatian, good. It's light-hearted, it's Horatian.
Horatian is sometimes called Ciceronian, Cicero, but don't worry too much about that. It's much more complicated than Horatian. What type of satire is A Modest Proposal? It is definitely Juvenalian. It is caustic. So, the age of satire was largely, the ground was prepared by Dryden but in the 1680s and 1690s. So it doesn't just sort of emerge out of nothing, but it finds its greatest exponent in Swift. What is necessary for satire to work? Something to criticize, good. So if you live in a hole in the ground, you can't be satirical because it's totally criticized. Right. What else? This is probably
normal, wouldn't work. Everyone would criticize
it. Right, okay. But what we need fundamentally is a shared value system. Okay, there needs to be hegemonic values. Otherwise it doesn't really work because different people have different values. Which is one of the reasons why you don't get satire from the period of the interregnum, etc., when you have a civil war and the consequences of the civil war. And you certainly don't get satire after 1790 because after the French Revolution, society is very much divided between people with more radical values and people with more conservative values. So there's no real ground on which to base your satire. But in this sweet period, if you like, between, especially between 1700 and 1750, there is very much shared values in terms of sort of what is socially good behaviour. You know, there's a value of moderation, as we're going to see. So the extreme values, like the Puritan values that theatre was bad, theatre was evil and sinful, largely disappear. There are bigger things to worry about than theatre if you are on a moral crusade. At the same time, the excesses of the aristocracy become seen unacceptable, and so we have this sort of consolidation of moderate values very much as we're going to see around the periodical essayists. So we have, as we're going, I think it's, is it next week? Possibly, yes. Next week we're going to see people like Addison and Steele, and those two people, for example, are associated with the Whigs, but when they're writing their periodical essays, they're really trying to write for everybody, and the values are common values of sort of basic decency and typical sort of moderate bourgeois values. If you know. What do you know about Jonathan Swift?
Two words, and
What were his politics?
Well, first he accepted Jesus as leader. He became slightly seen as one of his colleagues. We had
Right. So, basically he went Tory at just the wrong time. He went Tory when the Whigs came to power for the next 60 years, sort of thing. So, for the rest of his life, basically. And we'll see how that sort of thing with patronage is hugely important. We have almost exactly the same, well, we won't necessarily see it now, but we have exactly the same sort of thing happening with John Gay. John Gay is the person who wrote The Beggar's Opera, which in previous years we studied instead of studying The Way of the World. I think probably The Way of the World is more fun. Well, I don't explain it. The Beggar's Opera is a musical. So that is good that we're not looking at a musical because I hate musicals. It's basically sort of the first modern musical. But the same thing happens to him because he is a supporter of the party which is out of favour after the death of Queen Anne. He has all sorts of problems in terms of patronage and things and getting a good job in government, where in the past you could, you know, people like John Donne would be looking to finance their poetry by being somebody's secretary or having some sort of administrative position. Okay, and what do you know about Ireland? 10 facts about Ireland. Right. Why? No, he didn't. He didn't start it. Right.
Well, he didn't start it. Yeah.
Curiously, it was started. It was started by the last Catholic monarch, which is pretty bizarre. But anyway, so there is the process of settling people from the lowlands of Scotland in Ulster as a sort of new middle class, and encouraging, giving them land, giving them other people's land, of course. And encouraging them to build fortified homes, sort of thing. So the attitude is absolutely and clearly colonial. And the attitude was effectively colonial until nearly the end of the 19th century. It's that type of situation. Why is there this big sort of problem with Ireland, always? Is it sort of personality or? Is it the climate or why is there such a big deal about Ireland throughout early modern and modern British history? Move back towards the microphone.
It was a colony,
but I mean, when Ireland became a colony, England was also a colony. Ireland was colonized not by the English, but by the Normans. The first conquest of most of Ireland was, I think, in 1090. The older colonists who were known as the Old English, although a lot of them were not necessarily actually English, most of them were by the end English speaking, were Catholics. But the biggest problem was that Ireland was seen as a good place to start an invasion by foreign enemies. So France and Spain typically tried to provoke, as is logical politically, tried to attack the British Isles through Ireland typically, and tended to foment rebellion in Ireland. And typically what happened again and again and again was that usually they would arrive with too few troops to do anything really problematic apart from causing a problem and causing a distraction. And the English would generally speaking be relatively sort of benign with the foreign troops and just send them home and then treat the Irish as traitors and massacre them for having rebelled. And so you just have a sort of cycle of this type of thing happening. Why is the Elizabethan period so important? I mean, this has basically been going on for 1,000 years. Why is the Elizabethan period the most important period? Well, in the Elizabethan period, we have what's called the flight of the earls. So the Irish aristocracy, the old Irish Catholic aristocracy, at that point when they are defeated, when they have supported the Spanish army and then that was defeated, they leave the country as a social class. They just go and leave the country and go to either France or a lot of them to Spain. And that means that the natural leadership of the majority of the Irish people who have stayed Catholic disappears. And that is, are we recording? I have to remind me to record.